I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
Anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair, and
my knee hurts.
My arms are kind of rash.
Is that a rash?
And I had Asian food, and that makes me
What's
feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant.
Welcome back, friends.
Welcome back, Cotter.
Yeah, welcome back. Welcome back, Cotter.
I love that show.
Did you really?
Yeah, I watched a lot of Nick at Night when I was a kid. I have watched almost no important pop culture television, like, because I wasn't really allowed to watch a lot of television. Uh-huh. But in the summers, I would watch hours of Nick at Night every night. So my favorite shows are like The Monkees.
Okay, yeah.
Welcome Back, Cotter, and The Partridge Family.
Okay, so
yeah.
The 70s.
Yeah.
Largely the
70s. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I watched Leave It to Beaver a lot when I was a kid.
But not, that also as like a throwback back show. Or was it on when you were a kid? When did Leave?
No, it wasn't on. No, that was,
it was on,
the 50s.
Well, that's what I thought, but I wasn't sure if, you know, how, like, because for, I forgot whether it was on in the 50s or a show about the 50s, sort of Wonder Years style.
Both on in the 50s, about the 50s. I think you're thinking of Welcome Back, Beaver. No, but there was a show like that. There was like a Leave It to Beaver, like as adults. Yeah, like I think his name was Jerry Mathers. I think that was the guy who played the Beaver.
Oh.
Yeah, like grown up Jerry Mathers and like his brother Wally, and they just like had kids. And it was sort of like Fuller House. But somehow less cheesy, actually.
Yeah.
It was the same way in the summer. Was yours actually at night?
Yeah.
You watch Nick at night?
Yeah.
Mine was just in the day. My parents weren't at home.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I would just watch. Actually, my parents didn't care how much television we watched, but I had a babysitter that was like 18 years old that put a half hour restriction on
good
us.
Good girl.
No, it was a guy.
It was a guy, and
he was a terrible
guy.
Person. I disagree with you, and I don't like how quickly you turned on me in that.
I'm such a square, and it's insane because I want to write television, and I actively am like, it's bad. It rots your brain. I believe it.
If my old babysitter Mike Shingles ever gets a show, you're gonna be a staff writer for sure.
Mike Shingles, what a good name.
Yeah, yeah. The Shingles brothers, they were our babysitters.
No,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had the Stacy fam was our. Okay. We had my second grade teacher, Mrs. Stacy, lived around the corner. I loved her so much. She was so pretty. She was like the prettiest teacher. And she had a bunch of, she had three kids, two also very pretty girls. Like, kind of like pretty in the, I think probably objectively pretty, but I think pretty in the way that when you're a kid is like the prettiest you can be, which is like, they were like, had red hair that they like wore in a cool side ponytail, you know, like, and they were in high school and I was in second grade. I just remember thinking both of them were like, exactly how I would like want to look.
Because
they both
exactly
kind of
like
look
that.
Like Punky Brewster, I guess.
Okay, yeah. Do you know that I went to college with Punky Brewster?
Really?
Yeah, my freshman year, we were both freshmen at the New School for Social Research together.
Wow.
We took a poetry class. She was actually very good. She was a very good poet.
Oh, cool.
I think people are expecting me to say something disparaging about Soleil Moon Frye, but I've got nothing but good things to say. Well, not nothing but good things, but I'm not going to say any of the bad things.
Good.
I will say she was a very good poet and a nice person.
Oh, that's great.
So, Punky, if you're out there, not so punky after all, are you?
Not so punky after all.
You're a sweetie. Sweetie Brewster. what we're going to do today, folks out there in listener land, where you go to listen to your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
iTunes is out, listener land is in. we're going to do another one of these crossover episodes with our buddy Dan Black from UCB Podcasts, the Comedians of Wrestling podcast, which I was on recently. So Mal, I was wondering, are you a big fan of wrestling?
No. No? I mean, I have no real reference point for. You know, I'm not an unfan of wrestling,
right.
But it's just not. Like, it was never, and it was not for me.
Right. Yeah, I was a big fan when I was a kid. I broke my, or I fractured my collarbone. I attempted to do the Macho Man Randy Savage flying elbow drop.
Which, yeah, I'm aware of that.
You're aware of that one. Yeah, it was a big one.
Yeah, it was, wrestling really was a part of the zeitgeist when we were growing up.
Very much so, yeah. And the Macho Man in particular was one of the big names. And so I was at, I don't remember where I was, but somewhere where kids hang out, and I perched.
The docks.
At the docks. Yeah. Hanging out at the docks. You know me. As a kid, making a few bucks. loading freighters.
Honestly, in Detroit, is there any water?
Yeah. There's a river that divides United States and Canada. The Detroit River. Yes.
Oh well, okay, great. You were on the docks of the Detroit River.
I was on the docks of the old Detroit River, sending Coney Island chili dogs to the good people of Windsor, Ontario. In exchange, they sent back maple syrup galore. I was hanging out someplace and decided I would try the Macho Man Randy Savage flying elbow drop from perched up high. I don't remember what I was perched on. Perched up high, I was going to leap off onto an inflated like air mattress, or maybe it might have been like an inner tube. Or So yeah, I think it was an inner tube. I was gonna leap off, nail the elbow drop, pin the inflatable. 1, 2, 3, and be declared the champion.
Yeah.
What it didn't occur to me to check on was whether or not the inflatable was inflated, and it was not. And and so I collided with the ground and fractured the old collarbone.
Oh, no.
Which is one of the more common fractures and breaks, but you couldn't tell that to young me. I was in pain.
That's a painful one. I mean, you can feel your collarbone. Like, I'm touching mine right now. It's like just thinking about it breaking is like, ugh.
It was a roughie.
That's terrible.
Yeah. And I would say that probably disparaged me on wrestling for a little while. That's probably fair.
I'm amazed you didn't also fracture your elbow, because your elbow probably slammed on the ground pretty hard.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
You would think on the elbow drop that the elbow,
yeah, that the elbow would be susceptible. Yeah.
No, yeah, it was all I guess
all collarbone,
In retrospect, I guess what hurts most is I missed the move.
Yeah.
I didn't nail it. No wonder I didn't get the pin. No wonder I'm not champion. What about you? Was you got siblings? You were the older sister to two younger brothers. Was wrestling a part of your upbringing?
I would wrestle with my little brother, which is like I would wrestle with I have two younger brothers.
Yes.
One of them is, we're basically roughly all like spaced out by 4 years. And so like my middle brother, Brian, we would wrestle when we were both kids, which is really unfair because it was like, at whatever time, he was certainly significantly smaller than me. But we would play wrestling. And I feel that it was like probably just an excuse for me to kind of like low key beat him up, I wasn't a horrible older sister when we were kids, but I wasn't great. I was definitely a little mean because I like loved when I was the only one around.
Yeah,
I was like a little fucking princess. I was like loved as being like the star of the family, all the attention. And then when my brothers came in the mix, who now are truly like just like two of my favorite things in my whole life. Like I cannot shut up about how cool I think my brothers are. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, I was like, what about when it was just me? And so I would definitely kind of roughhouse with my younger brother and push him around a little bit. One time I remember I pushed him into a tree. It was like all kind of under the guise of playing, but I pushed his head into a tree. Ooh. And it definitely hurt his head.
Yeah, you
did. We were also playing. We were going to Six Flags at one of those nights when my dad's company, a client of his, when they shut down Six Flags and only the clients of a certain company can go. So we were my whole family went to Six Flags, and I was playing that game where you kind of pretend to, so like you're sort of walking. I was walking with my brother and sort of pretending to push him, but then I crashed into him too hard, and he went skidding out on the concrete of Six Flags. It's terrible. I'm sorry, Brian, if you're listening.
He's over.
Yeah, I mean, everything is fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's sort of my only real experience with anything wrestling-ish.
I was big in when my brother and I don't think my brother enjoyed it. I don't think any younger brother really enjoys wrestling with. It would be the equivalent to like a middleweight wanting to fight a heavyweight.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just a bad move for the middleweight.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do remember the worst of it was that he agreed to wrestle with me. And then backed out, and I took it to family court.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I took him to family court. I don't remember what my parents' role was, but I do remember that my grandma was the judge.
Wait, did you actually have...
Yeah, we...
How did family...
Went to the living room. We made... I made my case. He made his case.
Oh, my God.
Similar to how a younger brother rarely wants to wrestle an older brother, they definitely do not want to debate one in court. no matter the officiality of this court, they don't want to have to make a closing
argument.
How
often did you bring things to family?
This was the only time I can remember doing it, but I was like,
but the infrastructure was in place.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point we know the infrastructure of a courtroom, and it's pretty easy to just like, well, if the grandma's here, she's going to be the judge because she's the matriarch or whatever. And I assume my parents were like the lawyers or whatever. I guess one of us each got a parent. I don't know which parent I got.
That's dodgy too, because the parents got to pick their kids.
I assume it led to their divorce. It definitely led to my brothers and mine.
You guys were the first ones to demand people take sides.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And I won the case, and he was forced to wrestle with me.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, that's a bad judge.
The law is the law.
So the a verbal agreement was deemed to be more important than the fact that a smaller kid had to wrestle a bigger kid.
He committed. And
oh my gosh,
the law will not be mocked, Madeline. it was insane. And he was very, he was hurt. I would say it was one of several incidents from childhood in which my brother was forsaken and very badly hurt by it. But in subsequent years, he would always bring it up and be compensated financially for it.
What?
So yeah, like there was a time like this, without going into the story of it, the same grandmother got tickets to the World Series. The last time the Detroit Tigers won the World Series, and there were four tickets, and there were five of us, and my brother was the little one, and so he didn't get to go. And then anytime he would bring it up later in life, he would get $50. So he knew.
So he's wins in the long term.
Oh, he lawyered all of us, but at that time, he lost the case. And what I like to tell everyone is I'm undefeated in family court. Yeah, so don't try me. Should we get rolling with our cast pod?
let's cast.
Folks, we are back. We have just a great guest for you today. He is our brother in UCB comedy. He is the host of the Comedians of Wrestling podcast. He's also just a guy you've known from all over the UCB, from sea to shining sea. He's a New York UCB guy. He's an LA UCB guy. And he's an all-around great comedy dude, as well as an all-around great dude. Welcome to the podcast, Dan Black.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Dan, hello.
If UCB opens another theater, I'll be there.
Yeah.
UCB Hawaii, I'm down.
Yeah.
You know him from UCB Hawaii.
Yeah.
This guy's a company man.
Yeah. The Aloha Kid himself, UCB Hawaii's Dan Black.
Yeah, definitely be the funniest guy in Hawaii.
No question.
I give myself that.
Without a doubt,
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Well, let's wrap it up there.
Yeah, I think that was great. I think we nailed it.
We gotta make sure that we get to our comedy rankings Hawaii each week. Dan Black, another week in a row, still at the top.
This is great.
So we'll start with the same question we ask everybody.
On a
scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
I actually thought about this question because I heard other episodes where you ask every episode
where you ask somebody, and then
I actually was thought to myself, I was like, how much do I think about death? It's hard to gauge because I don't always think about death in terms of like as a negative.
Yeah.
So if you go, I think when you hear that question, you think, hey, how often do you think about death being like, how much are you scared of death?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like, being scared of death for me is not that high. I think that's like three. Yeah. Sometimes I have like that. I think we all have those like existential moments where you're like, oh my God, it's infinite. I'm in the ground and that's my body.
Yeah.
Like, like those horrific moments.
Yes, yes.
But I think if you want, I think ultimately it's like a 7 or 8 because I use death as like a motivator.
Right, right.
Like,
I'm very like YOLO.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think people think I live a YOLO lifestyle.
Also, I just want to point out the fact that you're still using the term YOLO.
I just started. I just started.
Dan just started using YOLO, just entered the fanny pack game.
100%.
You do you.
I don't know if I've ever audibly said YOLO until now.
How do you feel?
And the first time I said it was completely sincere. There was no parody. There was no sarcasm at all. I was like, no, I live, we're talking about death. The question was, how often do you think about death? And I'm like, I live a YOLO lifestyle.
For the first time ever, you'll probably never say it again. You will literally, you only say YOLO once.
Unbelievable how right out the gate I'm just as ridiculous as expected.
Listen, tell me about your YOLO life.
Well, I think I'm just like, listen, when you're living a YOLO, I'm a DJ. You ever heard of Ibiza? I've been there. I don't know what that is. Why do I incorporate, isn't it Ibiza? I don't know.
I don't know how I spelled Ibiza, but said Ibiza.
Ibiza, right?
I only knew that because somebody said it in the Lady Gaga documentary, and I was like, oh, that's how you say it.
Oh, yeah. That's how I get all my info.
It was Mark Ronson making a joke about Ibiza.
Classic Ronson. He's so funny. One of the top funny guys.
Funniest guy in Hawaii.
Black, you got Mark Ronson.
Dan Black, Mark Ronson. That's one and two in the Hawaii comedy rankings. Way low.
Yeah, I mean, YOLO. Anyway, number three is BJ Penn, MMA fighter. Anyway, so, and then four is Barack. But, I don't have a fifth. I wish I did. Do I know a fifth Hawaiian? That queen lady. Anyway, so I am motivated by, like, if you want to say like doing comedy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's just like, hey, I love this thing. I want to do this. I want to commit my life to it.
Yeah.
YOLO. It's just like, I'm going to regret if I don't do it. Like, I'm going to die. The outcome is the same.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Yes.
We all end up in the same place, regardless if you're like Donald Trump or and that's me just talking about him as a successful person. Just completely ignoring how awful he is. Just like, but, like accolades, we all end up in the same place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So for me, it's just like, hey, well, I want to spend the time that I have, in the way that I want it to be.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really positive way to use death as a motivator. Because a lot of people on this podcast have said like, oh, I think about death in terms of like, I haven't accomplished enough. And so like, I want to, like, I get afraid of death because I haven't done what I want to do. But like, tweaking it a little bit and being like, hey, like, when I realize my time on this earth is limited, let me at least do what I want. That feels like a very positive.
That is what I do. And I guess I think if my wife was here, she'd be like, you're painting yourself as this like well-adjusted. You know what I mean? I think I'm definitely like, you know, I'm a neurotic Jew in the classic sense. And so I think that I'm definitely like, fear definitely drives me in a way that like I wish it didn't.
Yeah.
But there, I do think death is something that helps me push through. I do hey, everyone who's in my way, they're all going to die. Everyone who's like, not in a way where like I'm angry. I'm just like, and all these barricades are all fake.
Let's isolate the quote of everybody who's in my way, they're going to die.
You can isolate that. Yeah, let's take that. Do you know, I try to be like a regular person. I try so fucking hard. I'm just like, I try to not like bring attention to every line. I try not to speak like in stand up, like I'm doing stand up, and this is what I am.
This is who you are.
I say ridiculous shit, and it's to my advantage in a lot of ways, but also not to my advantage in many ways. I had a conversation with Gabrus, who you just had on the show. Where I said something, and then he just started cracking up. I was like, no, I was just being sincere about that. And he goes, Dan, just relax. You're never gonna change.
It's funny because spoken by the man who will never change.
Yeah, you gotta really cut from the same cloth.
Totally. We're both like little Long Island guys. He just gets me in a way where, like, you know, I just see him. He's like, yeah, you know, I know your deal.
Yeah. I've really come to espouse the Long Island guy, I guess, just attitude towards the state of the world. I feel like I'm just, when Trump got elected, I turned into a Long Island guy. I feel like that's when it happened. Now I'm on side. Any liberal Long Islander is okay with me at this point. If you're out there, find me on Bumble. I'm not on Bumble. I'm not on. No, you'll don't look for me.
Bumble, yeah. I missed the whole boat on Bumble, man. Unfortunately. But yeah, no, Long Island guys are an interesting breed. There's a lot of liberal guys, but like, we were always liberal growing up.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, everyone would vote Democrat, but like, you know, they were pretty hateful in a lot of ways. So it's like, that's what kind of, that's like the thing I understand about Gaber. I think everyone understands. I don't know why we're talking about Gaber so much, but just because he's like the quintessential Long Island douche. Or maybe that's me.
Yeah. I'm like maybe the North Shore version. That quote as well. South Shore.
Which one's the nice one?
What?
Which one's the nice one?
North Shore.
Okay.
Or South Shore?
I
think, like, technically North is nicer, but there's like nice parts of both.
My grandma grew up in Bad Long Island.
Where?
My grandma lived. I grew up visiting her in Bad Long Island on Bayshore.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, it's next to Islip. That's Bad Long Island, right?
That's
the South Shore.
That's Suffolk.
What is that?
Suffolk County.
Suffolk County.
There's two counties.
Because I know there's like Rich Long Island and then there's Bad Long Island. I've only ever spent time on Bad Long Island.
You know, like the fish, the Long Island fish? The island is a fish.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the head of the fish. That's like Brooklyn and Queens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we pretend that's not part of Long Island.
Yeah.
That's part of the city. I learned that when I was like 15. I was like, it's part of the fish. and then there's Nassau County, which is like where the gills are. if you're tracking this metaphor.
And that's nice Long Island or
and
bad
that's
Long
like,
Island?
Yeah, the north part is where I'm from. That's nice. Yeah. And the south, they're both nice. They're both nice.
What town are you from?
I'm from a town called Roslyn.
Okay.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of Jews. There's a lot of everybody there.
Yeah.
It's very diverse.
Yeah.
It's very. We grew up super liberal, but like when the doors are closed, it's like the things that fly. It's like, hey, we say that, but we don't mean it. We don't vote that way. You know what I mean? Like, no one's actively hateful, but they're like scapegoating and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's pretty much Gabrus.
But that's what kind of happened with the election. Where I don't know. I feel like I'm derailing this podcast a lot.
No,
but
that's what we do.
Like this election, my friends. I think we're all kind of like doing this act where we're like pieces of shit, you know,
and
it's funny and blah, blah.
Yeah,
and then this election happened and then a couple of them voted for Trump. And I was like, this is not funny anymore.
No.
And we went out to dinner. I had a fight with like two of my really good friends, like in the rest. We were drinking and I was like, you have daughters. Like, how could you vote for this guy?
What did they
say? You guys have kids. They just didn't see it. They were making fun of me. Like, they didn't see it at all.
Yeah.
They didn't see my point of view in any way.
Yeah.
And look, I'm not knocking them. That's like hard to, you know, I don't think that's helpful to be.
Yes.
But it really is. It was the first time where I felt like my bubble was also like popped.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I'm divided between like my friends.
Yeah.
Because I had friends who voted for like Bush and stuff, but that was different.
It's a different thing.
We agreed on most things. They're just like, I'm going with Bush.
Yeah.
Now it's just like, come on, this guy's a crazy. This guy's a crazy.
Yes.
Like, you cannot see. This guy can't even speak English.
No.
You know,
I was just watching that video of him saying Puerto Rico. Have you been
like shooting the?
No, that video of him just saying Puerto Rico.
Oh yeah, Puerto Rico.
But he's just like Puerto Rico.
Oh, I know. It's insane. It's like the least. I kind of hate even talking about his gaffes because it makes him seem funny.
I brought him up too.
Like a funny character. He's like really like a horrible stain on this whole world, but
you probably try to actively avoid him on here and I just launch right
in. We don't avoid anything on this podcast.
But tell me, so you've got this YOLO life, you're just really living for the moment, and tell me about the neurotic, fearful side of your life.
I grew up like very fearful, I hate when I just like keep blaming it on like I'm Jewish, but like it really is like part of the culture, like part of the culture, you know.
Our moms do it to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. They find
it's
a way.
Very much like, it's very much like you should be scared. The world is scary.
Yeah.
Every single one, my five best friends growing up, every single one of them, their grandparents were Holocaust survivors.
Yes.
Like every single one.
Yeah.
So that's who our parents were raised by.
Yes.
People who escaped like the worst atrocity.
Yes.
Not the worst, there's a lot of atrocity.
Sure, sure, sure. One of the one of the worst.
Can't say anything anymore. Yeah. You know, you can't say anything.
Well, yeah, but it's,
we apologize to all the other atrocities.
Yeah.
We'll eliminate him from this podcast.
I remember
people
that.
People who are in the collection of greatest hits of atrocities.
Yeah. And even in like where I grew up, where there's like a high concentration of Jews, not like crazy high, but in comparison to like people we know who grew up not ever meeting a Jew. Even there, you grew up where, like, I remember vividly like one girl raising her hand when we're learning about the Holocaust and being like, yeah, but isn't it true that other people were like during the Holocaust, like other people were affected by the Holocaust or persecuted, you know, because she was like angry that we're giving it so much attention.
Oh, yeah.
And I never forgot this about this girl. I'm friends with her on Facebook. And like, I was like, this is not the way. I remember even at that age being like, this is not the right way to act.
Yeah.
No.
But we were like scared of those people and they were like in our town, you know?
Yeah.
So there's like a thing, you grow up in the Jew household just being like, you know, no one likes us. You know, like no one.
Yeah.
You have that too?
Yeah. I mean, well, just generally.
You're not Jewish,
like,
right? No, I'm
you
not.
You are, correct?
Yeah. No, just like being like ultra sensitive to the existence of anti-Semitism way before it happened. Like always preemptive striking, like. I mean, my household wasn't particularly aggressive in this particular in this way. But yeah, just like generally kind of feeling like. No, the world doesn't like us. They think that they like associate us with. They don't think that 6 million of us should have died in the Holocaust, but they do think that we're money grubbing. They do think that we're like neurotic and uptight, and they do hate Woody Allen. Like they think everything that represents us positively, they think of negatively. And yeah, you got to be aware of it at all times.
Right. But then like when you have the Charlotte, I'm getting this podcast is getting derailed. Like, but it does tie into, actually it does tie into you.
Yes.
Like when Charlottesville happened, like they're yelling about Jews.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
Jews will not replace us. Yeah.
Jews are like less than 1%, like less than half of, well, I don't even, the numbers are, we're such a minority on this planet.
Yes.
It's like Jews and redheads, like that's where what we make up. Yeah,
what has it yet? Like, do you feel like now you're appreciating a little more of that, like the root of that neuroses? Like, because I feel like
because it was kind of a phantom our whole life.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, I mean, I you know, except for like the only like real. You know, I mean, it's crazy to even say it's any kind of like persecution or like any, because it's, you know, it's the only time I did date this one girl when I was single. I dated her last week. Don't tell my wife. And I remember she was like from New Jersey. It was like, you know. And she just like clearly never dated a Jewish guy before.
Yeah.
And she would call me the Jew to all her friends.
Whoa. Oh, no.
Yeah. She would be like, oh, the Jew. And she would like tell me, like, I'm going to make you listen to country music. And there was like a real disrespect for my culture.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's she was like just
wild.
Culturally
she
trying
was
to
such
convert
a babe.
You. Let's see some pics of this boy. Come on, show us pics of the boy.
I can find her. I can find her for you on Facebook.
Please
that's
do.
Kind of the beauty. But really, it was like, that was the only time when I was like, oh, well, I've never I live in New York. Like, I've never been treated like different.
Yeah.
That's very weird.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I even like, well, Ben is Jewish. And so like,
right.
And was also raised like super secular, not at all. Like
same as me.
Yeah. And, but just recently, like, I remember like we were even like, this was a couple years ago when we were like, I don't know, thinking about going to like Paris. Cause a friend of ours had like, like a spare room. And she was like, come to Paris. And I like, and this isn't because like, this wasn't our reason for not going, but I remember like Ben being like, this sounds insane.
Well, so.
But it like feels. There are parts of Paris where I would feel vulnerable.
Yeah, there's a video of like a Jew walking through a part of Paris.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's like similar to that like catcalling video.
Yeah.
It was like when those were popular.
Yeah.
And there's parts of France that are like wildly anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
Which is happening as like Europe gets radicalized.
It's happening
everywhere. It's happening
also
everywhere.
Like it's just like it's but, like populism is like bleeding into anti-Semitism.
And Israel's super controversial, and it's more tied to that. And I get that. I not that I get it. I'm just saying, like, I see the root of it or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, my wife's mom is like, she's like, her like number one hobby is France. Like, she is in like French class all year long and then goes on trips. And she goes on every year, her whole class goes on a trip. Like to France, and she's fluent and she loves it. And I'm always like, well, and also my wife, her other side of the family, actually, no, same side of the family, they have a lot of French Jews who left.
Oh, yeah.
They all went to Israel.
Yeah.
They all moved. And so I'm always telling her mom, like, I don't know how much you can go to France anymore.
Yes, yeah.
Like, she was in, what is it called? Nice?
Yeah.
She was there when that terrorist attack happened.
It was like a truck
plowed into a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Like kamikaze. Yes. And we couldn't get in touch with her for like a day or two. And she was fine. She wasn't there, but you know what I mean?
That's like as real as it gets without it actually being real.
Yeah. So I think that ties in. We can go on this forever, but like there's a lot of fear in the Jewish culture.
Yes.
That feels like it's embellished in art, but it's
sure.
It's just 100% true.
Well, it's crazy to me how much in the past 1 year, what's like been like a funny sort of like painting of a type of person that we see in movies, like feels so much less cartoonish and so much more legitimate.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. it's crazy.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. Like everything. Everything. Yeah, it's like God. I don't want to quote Bill Maher, but I don't want to quote Bill Maher. But he did have this one line at one point. I saw on a clip that was like, we picked up The Rock, and we knew there were gonna be bugs under there, but we didn't realize there were gonna be like that many bugs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, it's just like, wow. Like, and I do find it interesting that like right away that Charlottesville thing, they're mentioning Jews.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's because Jews are pure white.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I feel like it's not really timely, but it is. It is like that's the conversation happening in the Jew households, which is like, hey, you don't want to be religious? Cool. We're not pushing the religion on you. But if they come, you're Jewish.
And since the Holocaust, that's always been the thing. Is like, it doesn't matter if you consider yourself secular, they would have considered you a Jew and you would be in a concentration camp. Like, I think that's sort of the solidarity among Jews is just that, like, it's no longer like just the practice of a religion any longer. It's like, you and I would have to fight to get alongside. We would hold hands. We'd clothesline them together.
Of course, 100%.
We'd
be on the front lines. Yeah. A couple of really powerful guys.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, come for us.
Come for us.
Me and Ben.
That's right.
Tag team. No, if they come for us, we're fucked. But have you met Israelis?
Yeah.
No joke. Yes, the real ones. Yeah, no question. Yeah. And that's why,
that's also like part of, I think, like, one thing hanging around UCB so long is like people throw around things that are anti-Semitic.
It's almost like a meta kind of joke because it's like people are like, oh, wouldn't it be crazy if someone still believed this?
Right.
And it's weird that now it like doesn't feel funny it feels like the air is taken out of it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you're like, so it is interesting. And I think also Jews notoriously have like an amazing sense of humor about their like plight, like about their struggles.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like look at like Mel Brooks, like it's always like, hey, let's make a Hitler comedy. And I think that's another thing that like when people get offended by comedy, a lot of times I don't connect. I'm like, why are you offended by that? And I think about it, I always take that into account because I don't just disrespect, oh, you're not allowed to be offended. But I'm like, why am I not offended?
Yeah.
Right. And it's because we grew up just being like, oh, we make fun of ourselves. Like, and we got like Hogan's Heroes and like whatever. Life is beautiful even. I mean, Roberto Benigni's not Jewish, right?
I don't know.
He's like Italian.
No, he's like,
he's like some Italian guy.
Yeah.
We made like the most lighthearted Holocaust comedy. And then he's jumping on the chairs.
I know.
Is he Jewish? Let's look that up. Let's see if he's Jewish.
Roberto Benigni.
I feel like he's half Jewish.
Oh, okay.
Let's find out.
But that's not even, you know, it doesn't even matter. Yeah. So that fear is there.
Yeah. And you said you were a pretty fearful kid. Were you a fearful kid?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like, in what way scared? I mean, not scared, like I wasn't scared to like go outside or like but I was scared to I was scared of more like professional things.
It
was
when you
more
were a
like,
kid?
Like it was, I really like loved theater and like I like would watch it in awe.
Yeah.
And I never got near theater ever. Like until,
really?
You, until like, UCB till I left college.
Whoa.
You know what I mean? Because it was like, oh no, you like everyone I know is like going to business school.
Like,
and it's like if you don't do this, you're like you're gonna fall behind and like no one cares about you because you're you know. So that's more of the fear over like the fear of like death.
Yeah.
Though there is a lot of like, hey, like, you know, buckle your seatbelt guilt also.
Yeah.
So I think that's like it was like, oh, if I do, I won't be successful. I was taking like accounting classes in high school.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I didn't like accounting or anything. Like at that point especially.
Yeah.
You know, now I have more of an appreciation for accounting.
For the number arts.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, I think that there's a lot of that fear there. Well, if you compare it to like a Gabrus, who's like a South Shore Long Islander.
Yeah.
Tie this into Gabrus all the time, but like he's a little more like he lived in existence that was a little more like wild and free.
When
he describes his experience of growing up, like drinking on the beach, of like being a lifeguard, being fucked up, you know, like ours was more like, hey, you got to get good grades, like college is looming, you got to get into college, you need extracurriculars, like there's a lot of that.
Oh damn!
Wow. Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have two brothers.
Was it the same for them?
Yeah, same. My older brother's a real interesting guy. He was weirdly ahead of the curve. Like my parents kind of like, I don't want to say they gave up on him, but like he wasn't going to follow a traditional trajectory. You know, like he like had a hard time in high school because he like, you know, he's not like good at like classic learning. Or like whatever that the classic academia. But he was on the payroll of the school. Like for the computers.
Really?
He's like a computer genius. He like ran, I would go to the theater shows because he ran the lights. He would do the booth.
No way.
So he was on the payroll setting up, like he was this incredible guy who was like ahead of his time. And like now he's like a big IT guy at JP Morgan. He makes more money than most people I know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he was just like a guy who like is like, he didn't want to read Grapes of Wrath.
Right. Here's
Like that's the thing, like our schooling system's so messed up that they can't. I imagine it's better now for recognizing like this guy is a computer guy.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's pretty much just this guy is a school shooter guy. That's pretty much where we're at right now.
Yeah.
Let's start talking about wrestling a little bit. Let's move on.
I would love to talk about wrestling.
You want to talk about wrestling? Let's do it. Yeah. You guys said it didn't have to be funny, so I wasn't being funny. I can bust out a couple of jokes.
That was great.
But the only thing I want to say is that I feel like, was I too militant about our plight is important too? Like, that's not the guy I want to come off as.
No.
No,
I don't think so at all.
We need to be respectful of everybody's situation.
No, what was interesting about what you were saying was just like, here's a little bit of where this like neurotic Jew stereotype comes from, and it comes from a real place.
And also like we're going into wrestling, but I was saying I also was like scared of like I think I grew up in a household where it was like, oh, you don't need any like medication or anything, you know, like you don't need that. What do you want to be on that? You want to take that? Like, and then it's like a lot of denying of like, oh, you might benefit from this. You know what I mean? But they didn't want to ever give me anything or anything. It's just like,
like no, you know, therapy and
I don't
your
even
household.
Think. Was just like, oh, you know, you crazy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. You want to do that crazy stuff?
Have you been to therapy as an adult?
Yeah, I like it. I think everyone should benefit from therapy all like mental health stuff. Yeah. And I think it's that stuff didn't even exist.
Right. Yeah. No, it only existed for me. Like I was like,
oh, because your parents
did.
Therapists. Yeah.
I think my first was like at 9. I think I've been to like probably 18 in my life, and like every different form that you can imagine. And now for the first time in my life, I'm thinking about going back. But it took me probably 17 years away to even like consider it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I did. I've been to therapy. The only consistent therapy is like we've done couples therapy. Like me and my wife, we've been to like that, and that stuff's great.
That's I've heard that. I've heard like so. I feel like so many people go like just for maintenance, and it's so,
I mean, I highly recommend it. It's very helpful.
Yeah.
Because it's like. You just need it. You need. I mean, I don't know. Everyone's relationship is different, but I'm a big proponent of it because, like, I think having like the arbitration. You know what I mean? Like, it's like just having someone who's just like, "All right, your turn. Now your turn."
Yeah, yeah.
And then also just the aspect of like when you go there, you're like, "Oh, we're here to heal."
Yeah.
Like
it's
hard to get in that mindset. Like we're here to. I don't know. Yeah. Heal. That's a little. Like we're here to like listen to each other and like, oh, we're both valid and it to get in that like nest.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It is weird that like that marriage is akin to so many things that definitely have a neutral party arbitrator. Like it's sort of like, you know, like sports has referees, like court has a judge, but just like you're just left in a room with like another or in a home with like another person who doesn't necessarily see eye to eye with you.
Yeah.
And you're just sort of like people are just kind of like, all right, figure it out. You two like for the rest of your lives, find a way to be in like at least compromised agreement. Like there's no one there to tell you like, okay, you're being a little nuts right now and you're being a little nuts right now and just like calm the fuck down you two
it feels like a,
an arbitrator would be nice for that. Maybe that's my new career. I'll be that third party in a relationship that tells both parties that they're going fucking crazy.
Yeah, it'd be great. Cool. All right, I don't want to derail you guys. I can go on forever.
Cool.
Wrestling.
Yeah. Let's you've been wrestling your entire life, right?
Yeah, I mean, I go like in phases. You know, it was up and down. You know, I always say like this I'll clarify is actually a bit I'm working on, like an actual bit, but I won't do it like a bit. But like, I think I loved wrestling growing up, loved it, and then I went away from it. Like when I was like got to like high school, college. In college, I was like, oh, I'm gonna try girls and like and drugs and like all that. But then when I went through like my second puberty, when I was like, you just become your old self again in a confident way.
Yeah,
but like,
yeah.
That's
such a good way to say it. Yes,
it's like I'm into all the same shit I was into like when I was before. 15 and under, but I had to go away from it for some sort of like growth, pride, not like experimental phase.
Yeah.
And then once I was like, oh, I know I'm me, and like it's annoying when you're like, I like wrestling. Fuck you. So that's where I'm at now. But yeah, like I love it.
Okay,
I love pro wrestling.
So here's my question on the subject of wrestling, because this is our death podcast.
Yeah.
A lot of wrestlers have died recently.
Yeah.
Which is the one that hits you the hardest?
Oh. Don't hit me the hardest. I mean, it's you get kind of used to it as like a wrestling fan. You're like used to wrestlers dying.
Yeah.
But like my favorite wrestler growing up was Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, yeah.
And his death was like a wild, almost like a professional wrestling stunt.
Yeah.
He hadn't been involved in wrestling for like decades.
Yeah.
And then he came back. I forgot what he did. He got to get inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Right.
He came back. He got inducted. And then he was on Raw for the first time in like 22 years.
Yeah.
The next day, dropped dead.
What? For how?
It was a heart failure,
attack.
Right?
I mean, he was juiced to the gills. Oh, have you ever seen what the Ultimate Warrior looks like?
No.
Like, this is a guy with his heart like...
Yeah.
His heart looks like you can see it.
Yeah.
Like you can see his
heart.
Can
I see a picture?
Yeah.
No.
Like, he at all like times looks like the most
just
stressed
out
person
out
that
of
ever
a hot
existed.
Dog.
Yeah. But
oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like the quintessential wrestler. Yeah. Like, you know, he's like yoked up.
Yeah.
And he was like really important when we were kids because he was the one that actually like stole a lot of popularity away from Hogan. Like Hogan was they had this feud and it was like this real like sort of dividing line. Like neither one was the bad guy per se, and you just had to choose between. And I think most people, like I'm a little older than you, but I think most people in like the younger demographic chose the Warrior over Hogan.
I think that like our age gap is like, just from remembering from the other podcast, is like perfect for that.
Yeah.
Like you were probably more Hogan guy. You literally watched him slam Andre live.
I was there, baby.
Which is dope. Uh-huh. But yeah, for me, I was like, it's not like I didn't get Hogan. I was like, this guy's so much cooler. Yeah. He runs, he's a lot bigger, he's got longer hair, he's got balls.
He was super cool looking. And his arms tied up.
He ran to the ring, full speed, ran to the ring, and just grabbed her up and and he sucked. He's such a bad wrestler.
he was really bad.
And I don't even know why, I just liked him because he had the face paint. It was just like, like that. And he cut these promos that, like, when I was a kid, I was like, this is amazing. And you watch them back now, and they're so everyone should watch them. You know, there's a DVD WWE put out called The Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. You don't have to like wrestling to watch it. It's just a guy who's self-destructed. They've since apologized for putting it out. And it's just people dissecting his promos, being like, what the fuck does this mean? He'd just be like, oh, I was sitting on top of a plantain and the gods came down to me, nosedive into the ground. Rawr, I am the warrior. That was it. It was nonsensical.
That was who the warrior really was.
All I did was like the energy.
He had great energy.
That was it.
And
he was all energy.
Yeah. Hogan, especially at that period, Hogan really had very little energy. Like Hogan would, you know, a 15-minute match would feature like three moves. A lot of just holding his ear up to a crowd.
A lot of pageantry. It was a time of pageantry compared to now. What do you have any relationship to wrestling? I'm so interested in the female perspective on wrestling.
I almost like it was like what like. Mean boys in my elementary school life. That's like really like my only relationship to it.
What celebrity death would have impacted you at that, when you were younger?
When I was younger?
Or it could be now, but it feels like we're more affected.
It's so weird. I'm not.
I don't think any celebrity deaths really affected
by
me.
Celebrity deaths. Like, it's like none of them have ever made me actually sad. I can appreciate why they are sad and like, you know, and the ones that are like very like surprise, like, okay, this sounds crazy. Yeah. I think the celebrity that affected me the most
Brittany Murphy.
Anton Yelchin. He was like such a lovely actor and I liked a couple of his movies and he was
like 27
crushed by a car. Felt the most that, like that could be like a story about like your friend's brother or something. Like that actually shook me, I think, because it was so random and he wasn't like there wasn't one of those like young deaths that are maybe more tragic because you can kind of see it coming. It was like drugs or like just to have like someone who seemed like he had like such a nice rest of his life ahead of him just die by such a freak accident.
Totally.
Yeah, I think wasted potential is something that really freaks me out.
Yeah.
That's wasted potential is not exact in that way.
Yeah.
But like when you're like,
an unwritten, that story was so unfinished.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly.
It was such an unfinished. Yeah.
Yeah.
But and like not even like it felt narratively wrong. You know, like even with like like an Amy Winehouse, that is such a tragic story, but it is such a full, it's like a complete story. You know, like that is a story we're familiar with.
Amy Winehouse, I was talking about this the other day, if you're like into death. Amy Winehouse died when she was 27, right? Yeah. I believe.
Yeah, yeah. She's part of the club.
That's the club, right? Yeah, 27's when like Jimi Hendrix died, not John Morrison, that's a wrestler. Jim Morrison. That's a John Morrison who's been on my podcast. It's John Hannigan, because he looks like Jim Morrison, and that's why they name him that. Wrestling's the best. And like Kurt Cobain, right? They were all like 27. And I was like, oh, well, music you're able to like perfect by 27.
Right, yeah.
I was watching, I've mentioned this like four times, like I've never watched a movie before, but I was watching the Lady Gaga documentary last night.
Yeah, 5x2.
Yeah, 5x2, which was great. I don't care about her at all, really. And like I kind of watched it for no good reason, but it was a great doc.
That's also people are liking it. There's a lot of buzz around it. Yeah.
I was shocked that she's 30.
Right.
I was shocked that she's so young. I was like, no, it does make sense because all of these musicians have so much to say at a time in our lives when I feel like you're the very stupidest.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
but,
totally.
But I guess that's like what makes you a brilliant musician is like you can be 26 and create something that resonates absolutely with people in such a deep way it becomes an anthem. Like I can't imagine having anything. It was like if I like took my short fiction that I wrote in college and like put it out in the world and everybody was like this is the best.
Well, it's fascinating.
Yeah,
but part of the reason I think this is what, you know, I don't know if you have this with your husband, but like I have a thing where like sometimes my wife, I'm just like, just talking.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like solving the world. She calls me the low stakes detective. She's like, I'm like, all right, hold on, let me figure this out. And I'm trying to figure things out. And she's like, that's like so pointless.
Yeah.
And like one of the conversations we had recently, I remember we were driving and taking the dog to the dog park. And I was like, oh, well, why can you master music at 27?
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
Well, because you can get the way the brain works, like you can get being like a master of your instrument or like you can understand music perfectly when you're growing up. That's the best time to learn just music.
Yeah.
So you get those tools. So like by the time, you know, you see kids that are like 7 who are like expert guitar players, like, you know, like you're so you can get the music, you get all that training out of the way super young. And then you're able to express yourself with that. Whereas like you can't, that doesn't work that way with like stage performance or like acting. You can't like you, especially stage stuff.
Yeah.
You can't like be comfortable up there, comfortable with yourself. Also, people like don't want to hear what you have to, you know, I don't know.
I guess maybe like also songs are so simple that like, also, or it's like much more of an intangible power to them is like, cause there's a melody and that's what we're responding. Like,
also, we're only talking about pop music.
That
like,
was
that's the thing
part.
Is that like the great musicians are, you know, like Itzhak Perlman or whatever wasn't great when he was that age. But yeah, when you're, and I think if you pulled something out of, you know, your catalog from when you were young, I think people would respond positively. Yeah. I think that's the thing is that like simple is what sells to the masses.
Pop music is what I was directly speaking.
And it's true. I mean, they are great, but I think that I think there's a reason that like Kevin Smith's best work was done in his early 20s. It's because as soon as he got to the point where he had something actually to say, he's no longer the voice that can.
Yeah. Well, also, you take yourself so seriously.
Oh, you're saying your argument is like some people are pop.
Yeah.
Like some people are pop and they will be done by 27.
Yeah.
Essentially. Mm-hmm. And then some people are like artistes.
Not necessarily done by 27, but I think that some people, I think that we do have our time when we're sort of like, when we peak only in terms of our ability to communicate.
Well, like Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's like my hero.
Mm-hmm.
I've met him a couple times. I meet him like every decade, actually, and weirdly. You know, I mean, I don't think anyone's saying he's doing his best stuff now.
No.
I don't think he would say.
No.
Like, he's still the man.
No. Yeah.
He's still very popular. But you're like, oh, well, that's okay. I think that's okay that some people are like Bud Early. To be honest, I would fucking love that. That would have made my life a lot easier.
Yeah,
right now, I'm going on the fact that, like, I'm a real age like a fine wine.
Well,
my comedy.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to make your riches in that later period in life when you're a fine wine. You want to make it early on when you can essentially, like, you know, I mean, cat videos or whatever, like all the stuff that's most, all the stuff that makes the most money are those things that are, you get the point. Like,
but,
it's, you know, you can't get rich as an Itzhak Perlman, but you can get rich as a Justin Bieber if you're popular during that period of your life when people.
Well, this ties back to maybe the. I don't want to drive the combo for you guys, but I am in between. I am in the middle. But I think if you want to, this might be tied into like my fear uprising, can't even speak. But I think like I know for me, like there's no chance that I could have done great comedy work at 21.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like I could be funny, but there's really like no like. I feel funnier now at this age. I feel like more like I have something to say. I feel like my ideas are like good. I like them.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I really think there is that element of, and I think that's a tough thing to grasp when you're like coming up in comedy. You're like, oh, you know, oh, this guy made it at like 19.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, why is that not me? Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And that for that fear, like for a long time, that was like, that freaked me out. Like playing the numbers game.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. 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 So what? Do you have more questions about wrestling?
Oh, I mean, we just sort of. I mean, there are some things that are, you know, general sort of like topics that we can play around with that involve wrestling. But no, I mean, we were. We'll do a little game okay. at the very end that's specific to wrestling. Yeah. Well, there was one thing. So you brought me on your podcast,
yeah.
to try to get me back into the fold. I thought an interesting thing to do would be to come up with the clips we could show Madeline that would make her least likely to enjoy wrestling. Basically, have you ever heard one of our Figure One Chicken games on here?
No.
So Figure One Chicken. Figure One is a site. It's basically Doctor Instagram. Like, it's all these pictures of like horrifying things, and we would, you know, I would show one to Madeline, or she would show one to me, and we would, you know, basically try to look at it for as long as possible before we freaked out. And I thought we could come up with a couple of clips we could show Madeline that would make her freak out about wrestling. Basically, like the most graphic, all those moments that didn't go quite right. Like, for instance, the Sid Vicious.
The Sid Vicious.
Should we show her Sid Vicious?
Is that one? Is that the guy who fell on the rail and broke his back? That's the only wrestling injury I've ever heard.
You mean the guy who died?
Yeah.
No, that's Owen Hart.
Yeah.
I don't think we can find a clip of that, I think.
I don't want to see
it. You can find something. Like, there's some video of him, like, falling, but it's not like, you wouldn't be, like, horrified by it. It looks like a guy falling.
Yeah. So sad.
Were you watching that?
They didn't have HD then, so it wasn't like, you know.
Were you watching that pay-per-view?
Yeah, I was watching
it, too. Yeah, I watched it live. Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, Madeline, what's, like, do you get... I mean, I've picked up on some of your neuroses from listening, but do you get like freaked out by injuries?
I get like, I'm very easily, like just like something graphic. Like I get, it gives me a very visceral reaction.
So like, cause I have like, when I went to see The Theory of Everything with my wife, like I was like, I wanted to like walk out.
Yeah.
Like,
Cause of
like ALS.
Oh, so seeing like someone's degeneration
that ties into what did I call it? I didn't have a good term for it, but like a waste of
waste of potential.
Unfair, right?
Yeah.
It's like anti-Yelchin. It's
Now
that one turned out okay for him, like you
sure,
know.
Yeah, he got to like be famous and rich and be mean to every lady in his life.
Is true. That I didn't even know. That was wild. But
I know.
But I'm saying,
everybody's like, "Oh, you're in a wheelchair. It's okay for you to be a piece of shit."
Who would think that's even? I mean, you know, you got to give him a little props.
Yeah.
How do you even pull that off? So I actually take that. Can we edit that out? Okay. Thank you. But no. That I like when I see people, I'm like, oh. This guy would have been so, like, he needed all his faculties, this guy.
Yeah, it's so fucking unfair. Yeah.
There's a my wife loves to watch like all these documentaries. She loves like, she's just like scouring HBO for like the worst shit. And then she puts it on and goes to sleep. And then I watch the whole doc. I watch this doc and she's watched it like twice too. She loves more morbid stuff. And I've gotten used to it, you know, to make the marriage work. But, there's ones like Kevin Pierce documentary. It's called like The Crash Test or something. Hmm. This guy's like a skateboarder. He's a snowboarder. He's like 18 or something, and he's better than Shaun White. And he's coming up with Shaun White, and he's beating him half the time.
Yeah.
And then they're getting close, and he's beating him every time.
Whoa.
And then he has one, he does like one flip, and the whole documentary is about how like the half pipe is getting deeper and deeper. They're going higher and higher. It's more and more dangerous.
And
he does one flip. It looks like pretty bad, but like you have video of it. Hits his head, traumatic brain injury. Can't snowboard ever again.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And it's his like whole existence. And you're like, that's so unfair.
That's so unfair. Is there anything? Yeah.
It drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so, like, you're the first person who's come on here and talk about the injustice of an injury.
Injustice in general drives me nuts. When I see like something, I'm like, that, and that makes it tough in this biz. When you're like, that guy got that.
Because nothing, world's not fair and life's not fair, but it's so acute.
Yeah,
in this
you're like, that person's never made anyone laugh.
Yeah.
You're like, what? Have you been at shows? Like, no, anyway. I can't, by the way, I'm not thinking of any specific example.
Of course.
I just speak in hyperbole for fun.
It's just like those kinds
fun.
Of things. Yeah, of course.
Right.
I'm thinking of several specific
Yeah.
And we'll do that in the next 30 minutes for our Patreon page, where we reveal everyone that we've been talking about throughout the episodes.
I'm weirdly not like, I'm pretty good with jealousy. jealousy and stuff. Yeah. My wife's always like, hey, you're like good about jealousy. Like, but the thing I can't take is like, all right, come on. Like this guy over that guy. Yeah, what, come on.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be me. Right. It's just like,
but like it should be
fucking,
fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's the funniest guy I know.
Yeah.
or girl. I'm saying guy is like the universal guy.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I derailed.
Oh no, it's okay. We just talk.
I got a lot to say, everybody.
Yeah,
I got a lot to say.
This is your room too.
That is true.
You feel at home.
That's probably it. Is I feel like I'm at home here.
Yeah. Have you ever had a big injury?
No. Nothing big. Nothing big. I've only broke my arm. I rolled my ankle pretty bad recently.
Yeah.
That sucked. But even that is like, I'm like, oh no, I'm not mobile. Like that's even like, that's unfair.
Yeah.
I don't like that. But no, nothing to write home about.
Yeah.
You said
yeah.
you had broke your arm?
I broke my arm twice, like playing hockey when I was a kid. Okay, like that sucked. Yeah. But yeah.
That's pretty big.
No. All right. Let's do this thing because if I get into like anxiety and stuff, then we'll never stop.
So,
yeah.
Okay, Madeline, here, click play.
Oh my
you can
gosh.
Watch this video.
Is that the Sid
this.
Video?
Yeah, it's the Sid.
Yeah, I hate this video.
I'm so unhappy. Ben called me to warn me we were doing this, and I was like, it's fine. I love doing this. This is horrible. I really am not happy to be watching this. What just happened? Ah! No! Get it out of here.
You're what? Holding it.
And he goes like, yo, pin me.
No. Goodbye. I don't want to watch it. I was watching the guy who got kicked in the head. Like, that was the problem.
Yeah,
I didn't see. His whole leg twisted the wrong way.
And also, you got to see it again.
No.
It's such a freak accident.
Yeah.
It's like just
what
literally.
What even is that?
His ankle snapped, and
it happened to a basketball player pretty recently. Remember?
Yeah, that Paul George. You just land funny, and then like I think that's the thing is that that's what was so graphic about this one is you can tell what you typically hear is that the ankle sprain hurts a ton, and that because the break is clean that you don't really feel it, like you're just incapable of walking.
Right.
But in his case, you could see he was like in agony, like he snapped like a thick bone.
Like,
yeah. And I remember when it happened, like I remember seeing this live, and that it was like it was an instance where like basically wrestling got aerial all of a sudden, like and so they were they wanted, this was a guy who was kind of a stiff wrestler, and they were like,
he's not a good wrestler,
and they were like, you have to do something off of. He couldn't even get to the top rope. This was just off the second rope or whatever.
Yeah.
And they just made him come up with some, you know, he's like 6'7", 6'8", a giant man.
Yeah.
And they were just like, okay, well, your finishing move now is this this boot off of the top rope. And he got to the second rope.
Disaster.
Snapped it. Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
Is that the worst one that didn't result in death that you could think of?
I saw one. I mean, I've seen some pretty bad ones, like, because I'm on like a bunch of wrestling, you know, as a professional wrestling fanatic, like I'm on like so many Facebook groups and like whatever, and they post all kinds of shit. So like I saw one where a guy did there's an injury. I don't know. It's a guy Chibata. I have never actually watched the injury, but he just came back and like they say he's never going to wrestle again. He had a big injury, but one guy did a backflip to the outside off of the rope. And then there's like the guard, you know, the guardrail, like before the, and he's supposed to like land on the wrestlers who are in front of the guardrail right outside the ring, but he overshoots it and both of his shins hit the guardrail and they both snap. So he snaps both legs.
Oh,
that's it. He's like, wrestlers
are
like,
squeamish
crazy.
About that or no?
Yeah, I don't like it. As a matter of fact, that's like, talking about my wife, like, she, like, I never watched like horror films growing up. Like, growing up where I was, like, it was like, you're going to go see that? Like, no one ever saw that shit. We would never go see, we wouldn't go see any of those horror movies.
Yeah.
And like, my wife, like, loves, she told me to see, like, It. She makes me go see, like, oh, let's see that one. And like, I'm like, I like, hate it. We go to Not Scary Farm.
We were just talking about this in our last episode. It's horrible.
It is.
It's
fucking
the worst.
Terrifying.
Why would you pay to have your mind and body feel like you are under a constant threat?
See, here's what I'll say about that. Like, I think if you could walk through that thing without, like, with Not Scary Farm, spend the night there, and like not feel any fear, like,
something's wrong with you.
You might be like a serial killer.
Yeah,
like,
something
might be like
a
test.
It's like a litmus test. Like, if you enjoy, I I know a lot of people love that.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know how that could be a pleasurable feeling.
I think like I some people, it. Like I think, I don't think my wife gets like super scared, but then wants to keep going. Yeah. So like, I don't think she like really likes it. I think she's just like enjoys the thrill of it or whatever. Yeah. But like I went to Knott's Scary Farm last year, and when I left, I was like, I'm a brave man.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I walked through these mazes, and like, they're so well done.
Yes.
The detail is like horrifying. I hate that like jump out thrill.
I hate the jump scare. Yeah. I can see, I love a horror movie. Like, I love a thriller. I love like a psychological thriller. Yeah. I love something that's like fucked up and twisted, and you're like, how could a person do that? But I hate a jump scare. I'm so easily startled.
I don't like them either.
I screamed so loud I saw that movie, The Gift. Like, you know,
my God. Yeah. My wife's watched it like 10 times.
It's a great movie. Yeah, I love that movie.
It is a good movie.
And there was like a
Gordo?
Gordo. it's a real twist situation. But there was a part in that movie where it was just something startling. I don't know, maybe like Gordo knocked on the door and I screamed. I was the only one in the whole theater who screamed, and I screamed so loud, everybody turned around.
Yeah, did you see Mother?
I may see that. If we get done in time, I may see that tonight with our movie pass.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I feel so glad about it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Did you hate it or did you love it?
You know, I have like a weird relationship with that movie because, like, honestly, I didn't like it. Like,
it seems like most people didn't.
It's definitely not like a good movie on paper, but then someone said to me, you know, Mike Lawrence, he's a comic, he's a stand up. He's like good perspective on things sometimes, like from his Facebook and just talking to him. And he was like, hey, but like, how often are they going to make like $30 million like art films?
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, oh, that is like cool. Like, it is very different. It is like experimental. Like, I'm glad something like that did get made, but ultimately, like, I don't want to spoil it at all. I don't think it spoils it, but that kind of movie is not my bag.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see it because I feel like the fun of it is having an opinion about it. So it feels like, love it or hate it, it'll still be a satisfying
experience. I love Darren Aronofsky, so like, I give him the benefit of the doubt. I give him the benefit of the doubt there. Yeah.
I'm totally.
But that's this scary stuff. Is the scary movies that they don't, I get antsy. I wanted to leave it, I wanted to walk out.
You were scared.
I was scared, and also like the movie. I don't want to spoil that, but like it just whatever. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like so, it's only for those thrills.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, I got this. Has to make sense.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
If you're gonna like fucking terrify me every minute and like
there's
make my heart
be, like,
fucking
a narrative,
like bust out of my chest, you better like. It better be like for something that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't been with that movie. You read half the reviews, and my favorite type of movie is like a Stand By Me. My least favorite type of movie is like a scary clown that attacks children. Yeah. And you can't seem to find the balance. Like there are half the people that will say, you love this movie then. It's a great Stand By Me story, and the clown part, who gives a shit? But there's like a fucking insane, I know he's not like, he's not actually a clown, but like he represents like an insane.
Is that even clear?
I don't know. Like, it doesn't, none of it's,
no, it's like, it's only like half someone's the movie, serving you your favorite food, but putting a bunch of razor blades in it.
And it's only half the movie, right? Like there's another half that's coming out, or it's half the book.
It's half the, because the book, I listened to that book on audiobook. Mm. Boy, is it a long book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a long book, and much of it doesn't make any sense. I was like, Stephen King, you're wild.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, I don't know. It drives me nuts when something makes just like no sense.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you guys something. This is a derail, again, I'm just driving the ship here right now. What, do you guys take meds?
No.
No,
are you?
Do
med
you?
People?
Mm-mm.
No.
Do you take meds? Yeah.
No.
Well, tell me about your anxiety, because you were gonna say, and then you just didn't.
Oh, well, I mean, I have like, I'm a very anxious person, very, a lot of anxiety, but I didn't even know what anxiety like was until very recently.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know till my wife was like, "You're a really anxious person," and I was like, "Oh, am I?" Like, because again, I grew up in that household of like, "You're fine.
Yeah,
everyone feels like that." Like, blah blah blah. But like,
And nothing is a bigger source of anxiety than feeling like you shouldn't be feeling like, then what you're feeling is like not real or not or a valid, like, yeah. yeah.
And like, you know, like that feeling in your chest yeah. of like, whatever, what do yeah. you call that? I don't know.
It's
that,
like a physical, it's like a tightness, it's like a physicalized anxiety. Right. It's like, yeah. A, yeah.
I have that always. Like, yeah. But I'm like, oh, you're not supposed to have that? Like, yeah. I didn't even know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I do, there is a part of me that is like, I'll never shake the like, whatever, probably from all the toxic masculinity I grew up like, feeding off of. It's like, I'll never shake the thing of just like ultimately it's like, yeah, just fucking suck it up. Like I'll never, yeah. I can't ever shake that. And like, the more I see like my friends go through like anxiety, depression and like this, like it always comes down to like suck it up at some point. And like, so that's like the dichotomy or whatever, the contradiction of the whole thing, where it's like, yes, it's good to acknowledge it exists, but ultimately you need to fight. And like, we're in this culture where it's like, oh, don't fight. I don't know. Do you know, does that make any sense?
I know that. I think like, what I think is, I feel like the positive version of suck it up is like this like idea that it's like, you're never gonna like, you're never gonna get rid of it. It's like not like, because I think people really tie themselves in knots trying to not feel anxious, trying to like right. eliminate anxiety. And I think that's impossible. But I feel like realizing that it's like sort of like a passenger that's on this ride with you and knowing what it is. So it's like,
right.
and knowing what's just what's real and what's not, like what's like sort of your anxiety speaking yeah. and what isn't. Like to me, like that's the healthiest version of dealing with it. And in a yeah. way, like to me, that's like the right version of sucking it up, which is yeah. like not trying to eliminate it because that's impossible and trying to do that will make you sick.
Yeah.
But knowing when to like basically like rather than suck it up, just like shut it up or
exactly.
like or just like be like, hey, like somebody, I mean, like I like love a nice self-help book. But like, you know, I remember like one lady who I love to read, this woman like Brené Brown, maybe she's who said it. Doesn't yeah. really matter. But she was just like basically like I think about my anxiety as like a passenger in the car with me, but yeah. it like sure as hell can't drive. And it like basically like can't even touch the radio.
You know, that's exactly the thing is like, I think it's this thing where you're like, hey, I have this yeah. is me yeah. and I have to recognize it.
Yes.
And that's it. You have to be like, I'm like, yeah, oh, that's my anxiety speaking. And also, but also at the same time, I'm not like, oh, my anxiety, it's an excuse for me not to do things. Or yeah. like, it's like, oh, well, you, like, and then, because I'm reading that, like, You Are a Badass. You
read what
that?
Is it? No.
Jen Sincero's book. It's good. I'm listening
yeah,
to it.
Yeah.
My wife recommended it, and I heard someone else talk about it. It's a really good self-help book. And, like, she does talk about, like, indulging.
Yeah.
Indulging anxiety is, like, feels like. It feels like a tricky slope. It's like, yeah, it's more yeah. like you're right. It's like label it.
Yes.
Be like, that's it.
Yes.
And then be like, all right, I'm in charge. That's the hardest thing I have a hard time. Like, I don't know. You hit my age, your friends start going through stuff.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah,
I mean? Yeah, you start yeah. having like, oh, this guy's up. This guy, he's in a thing. He's there. Everyone, no one's ever at 100% anymore.
No, but also you know what I mean? Feel like even like so much of like, I don't know. I feel like everybody is just trying to like, have people see them for what is actually going on with them. Like,
right.
so I feel like sometimes like if someone's like, oh, I can't do this because of my anxiety, etc. Sometimes it's just them taking care of themselves. But also sometimes it's like people just trying to be like, hey, I'm going through a thing. Like,
right.
you know, like I'm not just like there's something happening with me and you need to know that. Mm. So, you know, like why I'm acting the way that I'm acting,
right.
you know, like it's just like that, just that thing of like, I don't know, just sort of being seen and understood for that. Like
yeah.
it feels like it takes so much of the pressure off.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's yeah. It's really interesting. I don't know if I have like I don't know if I suffer from depression
yeah.
really. Like I mean I'm sure I do. I'm
yeah.
sure I suffer from yes, everything. Yes. I don't think I'm like I don't have like I got all the feels or whatever. But like I think anxiety is like my main thing. It's more like oh like this feels like an overwhelming day, but it's
yes.
not an overwhelming
yes,
day
yes,
by
yes,
any
yes,
means.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
and I just fight through it. I get up. I go. Oh, I don't want to get up. And then I get up
yeah,
and I
yeah,
do it. And
yeah.
I try to just like do something.
Yes.
I think sometimes that like on the internet the acknowledgement of mental health issues has become the like acceptance of succumbing to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the symptom
yes.
of like, we're losing that element of like what my mom gave me, which I really like respect her for. Gave me
yes.
that thing. It's like, you keep pushing, you keep going. Like
yes.
you're not skipping school today. Like
yes,
this and
yes,
like
yes.
that. I think we're losing a little bit of that.
Yeah. And also, I think what's contributing to that is like there's a little bit of a muddying of the waters, too, right. Where it's like some for some people, the way you push through is meds or the way you like you've got to figure out your tools. And I think like that's like there's like a lack of understanding. Like, you know, there was that thing going around for a while where somebody like tweeted like depression, like, you know, the only medicine you need for depression is like a pair of running shoes and get outside. And everybody was like that's responding stupid. With like the only thing you need for cancer is like, you know, a glass of milk and a nice little flag or whatever. Like,
and both so of those like, are stupid.
Both of those
both
are
responses
stupid.
Are stupid.
Yeah. It's like basically you just got to figure out your way to fight. And depending on how you're built, that's going to be something different for everybody, you know?
And you know, you're talking about social media, which ties into all this. Yeah. I mean, and I know we got to end, but we'll end it on social media or whatever. Yeah. You tell me we're ending, but I is like, do you notice that like when you're on social media, like how rarely you're like reading something from the person you like respect the most?
You never are, yeah.
Almost zero.
Almost zero, yeah.
And I'm not knocking people post. I'm like, I hate to be, one of my fears is like insulting people. Sure. I don't like, even though like it's like a tough battle. I don't like to insult people, but I also like to be this brash fucking asshole. It's a balancing act. But so you're like, the people that I really, a lot, not all of them. Yeah. This is obviously speaking in superlative, but a lot of the people I really respect and have turned, like, and have used it as examples in my head are gone from this conversation.
Yes.
And it's hard to even know that.
Yes.
Because like social
because
media feels like it's everyone.
Yes. It's like, cause it'll be filled up with whoever's speaking.
Right. Yeah. It's like, you know, the vocal minority or whatever, but it's slightly different.
Yeah.
It's like, all right. I had a thing the other day where like some girl wrote something that I thought on Facebook. I was like, I have to respond to this. This is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, this is not helpful. Yeah. I get where it's coming from.
Yeah.
I totally get it. And I understand the sentiment and your feelings are correct to feel this way. But this is such a superlative that it's like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, where is the line here? And then she posted it again, something else again. And I didn't respond. I was like, you know what, hell bad. I wrote it, deleted it.
Yeah.
She wrote something again. Then I saw another comment she wrote like the next day. And the next day I was like, oh, this person's sick.
Yeah.
This is a sick person.
This is a
like
sick
something
person.
Going on with this person. Yeah. Like they're not operating on all cylinders here. And I almost like started something up with this person.
Yes.
You know, it's not like fucking Deepak Chopra on there.
No. Right.
And I include myself in there. Yeah. I'm by no means an expert on what the right thing to say is to calm this nation down in this time of crisis.
Yeah.
But what I find insane is that like the same thing as like quelling your anxiety and like whatever is like I try not to succumb to all pressure because and feel less important.
Yeah.
Because all it does is make the people who think they're important rise to the top, like Donald Trump.
Right.
Yeah.
Those guys always win.
Yes.
Whatever. Maybe Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein. I don't know much about that, but like I'm saying, like there is a personality type that will always win
because they will never. They don't have that part in their brain that says this isn't worth fighting. I'm gonna
or they're sociopaths or on the spectrum. Right. Yeah.
They're just like. And, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Because when the crazy thing to do is keep talking, they will do that.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm saying it's like someone like Hillary Clinton is like, the election's so complicated, but like she's like too normal to win that election against someone like an evil. And it's just a metaphor. Like those people always win in every aspect of life.
Yes.
And I hate it. And I always try to tell it to my wife. I'm like, don't let that person win over you. That person's that person's a Trump.
No, and I do that all the time. I opt out when when a conversation gets to the point where I'm feeling like bullied or like not heard or like, you know, it will, my tactic is always to just be like, fine, you don't get me in this conversation anymore. Goodbye. And that's bad. Cause it's like, not like,
cause
I'm smart and good and have a lot of good things to say. And
true. 100%.
I just, but, and nobody wins if I decide to not say them.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, we all can cower. You go like, all right, it's not worth that. It's not worth this. It's like, no, you kind of, you need to fight. You know, it's easy to be like, all right, I'm going to take a knee and it's like, oh, people are offended by me taking the knee. Well, then I won't take the knee anymore.
You know
what I mean? Like, but it's like, no, there's tactics happening there, you know?
Yeah,
so it's like, it's like, it's a battle. It's like good people always get fucked over.
Yes.
And people who are like trying to sort their shit out always get fucked over by the people who don't see that they're fucked up.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes,
and
yes.
It's such a losing battle.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm always like, yeah. all right, fine, I can give it to my weakness. But then the other part of me is like, hey, like, this, if I determine something to be evil, I can't let it walk all over me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll keep happening.
Like it.
Anyway.
Yeah. Dan, do you want to plug anything?
Oh, well, I'll plug the Comedians of Wrestling podcast. It's a lot more lighthearted than what I'm talking about right now. I think I really touched on issues that I'm not qualified to discuss, which is the concept of podcast.
Sure. Yeah, that's what they're freedom. Made for. Yeah.
Podcasts are everyone's a doctor. I love professional wrestling. I love it. I think it's the most... I think it's the most underrated art form. I think it's one of the highest forms of art in the world. The professional wrestlers are some of the most talented people in this world. And I make the argument, we don't even like talent. This world, we don't like talent. Like, we like to applaud a guy like Casey Affleck in that movie who just, like, says nothing.
Yeah.
But a guy who can cut a promo in front of 20,000 people and get them up on their feet... And he can also flip like 30 times off of a 20-foot cage. He's also in perfect shape.
Yes.
You know, that guy is like, oh, that's trash or whatever. And that drives me nuts.
Yeah.
You know, and all the proof is in the pudding because The Rock is the top movie star in the world and he has a wrestling pedigree.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And John Cena will be one of the top movie stars in the world in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And he will have come from wrestling. Yeah. And it'll be a more respected path, and I will be ahead of the curve. So listen to the Comedians of Wrestling.
Get ahead of the curve with Dan.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Thanks, guys. That was all an awesome discussion.
Hey guys, we've got another one of those listener calls for you. We're excited for this one. It's a fellow Ben with a drug related injury story. It's practically from my own life. Take it away, Ben.
Hi, my name is Ben, and when I was 24, I was doing drugs and I fell out of a tree. I was at a concert at UCSD, San Diego, and my uncle had sold me what I thought were painkillers, but were actually Xanax. And so I mixed Xanax together with a bottle of wine and a Red Bull. And I watched a concert, and then I stumbled out, and my buddy, who was on the same mix as I, pointed to a tree and said that it was tall. I said that it was tall, but that I could probably climb it. And he said, no, you couldn't. And so I immediately went to the tree, and I climbed up about 15 feet, and I was hanging by one arm, just surveying everything I could see, and the muscle relaxant part of the Xanax kicked in, and my arm went limp. I remember thinking, don't, and I immediately let go, and I landed cross-legged, and I heard a huge snap. But because I had a lot of adrenaline and it was on a good mix of drugs, I stood right up. And then I fell over because I couldn't use my other leg and I didn't know why. So I stood up again and I fell over and I decided to just hop on one leg to my friend. And I said, hey, I fell out of the tree. And he said, yeah, I told you. And this other kid came tearing up to us and he goes, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? You need to go to the hospital. And I looked at him and I said, hey man, what's up? I fell out of that tree. And then my buddy goes, yeah man, my friend just fell out of that tree. And the kid looked terrified because we clearly didn't care because of the drugs. Anyways, I didn't know that it was broken and I kept walking on it and I actually went to work the next day. And I didn't have insurance and I didn't know that it was broken and so I just kept walking on it. And it was very swollen, but it finally healed. A year and a half later, I was at a job that had insurance, and I decided to get it checked out and see if that was ever a thing. And when I went into the doctor's office, the doctor took an x-ray, and he brought me in the room, and he said, listen, Ben, I normally point out the problem with my patients, but I want to see if you can find it. And I looked up and I immediately was like, oh shit, there's a huge fracture through my fibula. The tibia, the bone that's in the back of the calf. And it had clean break, shifted down, and, or shifted up, and it was still very bad looking. And so I freaked out and I said, can I pay you to re-break it and fix it? And he said, there's no way. You're stuck with the way it is.
Thanks so much for that call, Ben. That was a wild story. If you've got a definitely dying story of your own, drop us a line at the Definitely Dying Hotline. That's 323-388-3879. Once again, 323-388-3879. Thank you. This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes, and you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Definitely Dying.
Until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.